Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. On today's radio show, we have Chris Denisha, who's the head winemaker, and Tyler Kay, who's the assistant winemaker at Plebe Urban Winery in Asheville. Chris and Tyler, welcome to the radio show.
Hello, hello.
Thanks for having us.
Tell me how that name came up, Plebe Urban Winery. That's sort of interesting.
So the origin story of Plebe is based in the, basically embracing the common people. Plebe is short for plebeians. And when we were first, I guess, trying to find our who we really were and our place in the wine world, especially here in Western North Carolina, a lot of times wine can be put on a pedestal or believed to only be something that the patrician or a higher class could enjoy or understand, whereas kind of what we know and believe is that the common people, the plebeians of based in Roman times, were the ones who grew the grapes, who made the wine, and the ones we think out here who should be celebrated. So we embrace that, that we're the common people, we're the farmers, we're the makers, and that's who we hope enjoys our wine.
Tyler, what's your take on that?
I think it's awesome. I think wine should be accessible to every single person, from the working class to the blue, to the white collar. I mean, it should be enjoyed in fine dining. It should be enjoyed out of a can on the river. It should be enjoyed everywhere.
Tell me about the history of this place. How long ago did you actually get started on the project?
It was about 4 years ago that I first had the idea. I was up in the Boone area, where we still manage a few vineyards up there, and really wanted to highlight some of the unique grapes that were growing in western North Carolina, as opposed to off the mountain where Yadkin grows a vast majority of the wine grapes grown here in the state. And every time I would go down for a conference, really anything, their problems were not our problems. Our grapes did. Our chemistry was completely different. Our growing conditions were very different. So we really wanted to bring our unique grapes to a place. And so we thought Asheville, especially the River Arts District, if there was a community that would get behind some unique and more rare wine grapes, that Asheville would probably be that. So we started about 4 years ago, and I got it with my partners about 2 years ago, and we've been working on this since then, and opened September 1st.
September 1st, 2018.
Yeah,
super. I was here at the opening. That was a good time.
Yeah,
fun stuff. Okay, well, tell me a little bit about these special grapes.
The unsung heroes of a lot of the East Coast is really kind of what we're interested in. Some of the native varietals for winemaking that a lot of times were just relegated to jams and jellies, like Catawba, as well as Muscadine. But we've had some success with Catawbas in the winemaking. A lot of them are more cold hardy and more disease resistant French American hybrids that you don't have to spray nearly as much, or some we're hoping at all, if put in the right conditions. And the wine, basically what you get off the vine, you don't have to do much in the way of winemaking, as far as adding adjuncts and things like that as well. So that's really what we're excited to show.
I've been recommending that people take a hard look at Catawbas, Concords, Niagaras. Those are good grapes for the mountains, a good choice. They're good native grapes, and as you say, they are disease resistant. Do you have plans in the future to grow some of those grapes here?
Yeah, we have plans to plant on our farm, definitely Catawba.
Okay, Catawba is a good grape. A lot of people overlook it. There are a few vineyards in the southwestern part of the state who are making some really nice Catawba wine. It's hard to come by. They don't make enough of it. But that's because there aren't enough farmers growing the grapes.
Yeah.
It's literally an unknown grape.
Yeah. And so, its origin is actually to Fletcher, North Carolina.
Yep.
I mean,
come on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, there's a grape that should thrive here in the state. And And it's on his second year, I believe.
Couple years.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the way the rape business is, you know, for Muscadines.
Patience.
It's
a long game, man.
It's a long game.
Lots of patience.
You think grape's a long game, man. Even wine's even more so. Because, one of the hardest things when I talk to people that are interested in planting grapes and for the purpose of making wine, you talk to them, and generally you don't get a harvest, especially up here because of our growing conditions, till definitely third leaf, third year, and usually the fourth, you get a decent harvest. You know, these vines have to have root development, everything that has to go right for you. So the idea of pumping all that time, energy, money into a product that you're not going to see anything from probably till the fourth year. And then if you're trying to make wine, you have another at least 1, 2, 3 plus years. And so now you're 5, 6, 7 years deep into one vintage before you might see in year 7, 8. Yeah. Oh, maybe this is, maybe I should change something a little bit.
Well, plant some apples.
We would like to do everything we can to encourage people to grow more Concords, more Catawbas, and Niagaras. That's a very, very aromatic grape. Yeah. You know, it's almost like Muscadine. You can smell them 50 yards away when they're ripe.
Oh, yeah.
So we like to encourage people.
In, at one of our vineyards up in Deep Gap, there's some of those mixed in with our Traminette, and they're very aromatic.
It's good stuff. Good stuff. Make great wine. Along with the winemakers that are out there listening in, and the grape growers who are listening in out there, if you were to give them some advice on which grapes you'd like to see in a couple years growing here, what would be your suggestions for them?
We honestly have a lot. I know Tyler and I, I'll tackle, I think, two of them. I lean towards the grapes that require much less intervention, just from, we're especially rookie growers. Like a lot of the people I work with is their first year growing. They've never honestly grown anything, and so I steer them away from the vinifera that are difficult for people who've been doing it for generations. So just from that standpoint, I try to start people out with success. Catawba is honestly probably the workhorse that I see kind of moving forward for us. Outside of that, we kind of, for winemaking, we branch over into the French American hybrids. I love Traminette. I think we can do a lot of things with Traminette. And then vinifera, there's basically two. We're all basically talking about whites. We have a shorter growing season,
sure.
So getting red grapes ripe enough is not really feasible.
Yep.
And most of the times, even places that are much hotter than us here in the mountains require chapelization, adding sugar, tannin, you know, a lot of adjuncts to get it to, you know, mimic ripeness, as well as acid additions, where if we kind of commit to the grapes that we're not fighting against that, you know, hurricanes happen, rains happen every year. This is not a new thing for us on the East Coast. It's something that I think we should adopt and know. And the grapes that we're growing and our stuff that's generally off the vine before we really have those issues of rot, dilution from rain, and disease pressure.
Vinifera wise, I'm always in the camp of agreeing with Chris. It is white wine centric, but Albarino as well as Grüner Veltliner. Reasons being, just out here you need something with a little bit looser of a cluster, so you can get better airflow,
thicker skins,
which Albarino has. We average about 50 inches of rain a year out here. Rioja Espacio, Spain, they average about 72.
And that's where Albarino
is king. They usually grow it in a pergola so they can get more airflow so they don't have so much disease pressure. So it's something that in our mountains, it can absolutely, you know, in theory, hopefully work something, hopefully get planted in the next couple years to see more seeing success with our Grüner. It is fairly susceptible to what every grape out here is susceptible to between downy and powdery. But if you stay on top of it, and it makes a wonderful wine, there's great body to it, there's great acidity to it, aromatics are through the roof.
If there is another, was it Burchard? Are they doing the Grüner?
Yeah.
And we
bought grapes from them this year.
Yeah,
so
they've done some pretty good wine with it.
Yeah, we have actually two different vineyards that we bought Grunerwald Winter grapes from here in the state.
Who are the other one?
The other guy is in Henderson County.
Henderson County, about 15 minutes from them.
Yeah.
His name's Ken Parker.
Ken Parker. I don't know, remember the name of his vineyard.
I don't think they have one yet.
Yeah, they definitely do. they definitely do. Yeah.
Okay. We just call him KP, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We know KP.
KP's site, man.
Okay, folks, at this point in time, we're going to take a little break here, and we'll be right back, folks, so hang on.
Our program today is being brought to you by Sandy Sudbutt's Corn Silk Tobacco Substitute. Most of the folks here in Madison County know that tobacco has gone from our mountain farmers as a cash crop. Farmers all over the county are searching for a substitute, but none so far has been found as an annual crop. Grapes do offer a possibility, but the long-term commitment is something that most farmers cannot afford. Sandy Sudbutt lives back on Laurel Gap and is a third-generation corn pipe smoker. Her doctor finally told her to stop smoking to preserve her health, what health she has left. But Sandy's a determined old gal and never has been able to get more than an hour or so go by without needing to get her corncob pipe lit up and puffing like a steam train. One day she got an idea to try stuffing dried corn silk in her old corncob pipe and lighting it up. It wasn't tobacco, so she knew her doctor wouldn't mind. She says the taste is similar to tobacco with a slight corn taste to the smoke, but without the nicotine and other health-harming smoke components from tobacco smoke. Sandy experimented with many alternatives, but the corn silk was her choice to stuff in her pipe. Over the summer, she tried fresh corn silk, slightly browned corn silk, and totally dried dark brown corn silk. The slightly browned corn silk, just as corn was starting to ripen, tasted the best. She experimented with a variety of mountain herbs to add a little extra taste and interest to her smoking. Her mint patch out back by her pigsty was her favorite. Sandy added a few other wild herbs to her mix, and finally was satisfied she had the best combination. Now she can light up her old corncob pipe and truly enjoy her smoking. It wasn't long before her dad noticed what she was doing. He liked the smell of her smoke, so he decided to give it a try. He was sold on her idea after one puff. Several of her friends tried it and agreed that she should make it available for everyone who enjoyed a pipe now and then. Thus, Sandy Sudbutt's Corn Silk Tobacco Substitute was born. She had her cousin begin making corn cob pipes in his corn bin at his farm so Sandy could sell her Corn Silk Tobacco Substitute and a corn cob pipe as a package deal. It's turned out to be a real trend here in the mountains. Every farmer you see these days is walking around Madison County with a corn cob pipe in their mouth. Sandy Sudbutt's Corn Silk Tobacco Substitute is another special product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Sandy Sudbutt's Corn Silk Tobacco Substitute and Sandy's Corn Cob Pipes today at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been at the Plea River and Winery down in Asheville today talking with Chris Denisha, who's the head winemaker, and Tyler Kay, assistant winemaker. And also, during the interim here, we've had a little tasting of a few of the wines, which I think are quite nice. You should come on down and give it a try. So, folks, let's get back to talking to these people. Chris and Tyler, we've tasted a couple of wines now. Let's talk about what your full wine capability is here. How many wines do you have on tap that you could share with people if they came down today?
Today, we have 16 wines on tap. And then we have four guests, beers, and ciders from also local breweries and cideries in the area.
You want to mention them?
Yeah, we have Marshall Foch from the High Country, Western North Carolina. We also have some Traminette from our 2016 vintage. We have some vinifer from all over the place as well. Gruner Veltliner, Chardonnay, we have a Grenache, a Syrah, Pinot Noir, Cayuga White, and a few others as well.
And which of those do you make?
Out of those, we made the Traminette and the Marshall Foch Rosé.
Okay, and that's going to increase each year as it goes by, as you get more grapes from the locals?
Yeah, we brought in varietals from other winemakers that honestly, you're doing a great job with grapes that we think are going to do well here, or we already know are doing well out here. Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, while a lot of our stuff is already sold out and waiting for the next vintage to come on, we've invited other guest winemakers to pour some stuff, and we're actually about to have Addison Farms, Jeff Frisby, and Truthy, and the whole gang over there. We kegged up some of their wine, so we can pour some of their stuff on our taps as well.
If you were to tell somebody who's looking to start a winery, what were the things that you did right whenever you started this operation?
A lot of that's hard to say. And we talked before we started recording just kind of about just the wine game in general. Growing grapes as well as making wine is a very, very long game. And I think that's one of the main reasons people have a hard time getting into it. So a lot of our... what we've done right, or kind of what we really kind of see is stuff we've need to change. We're still not quite there yet, but I think that anyone trying to get into it, you got to start with something you know.
While you're thinking, I think one of the best things we have is our press. some of the wineries that I've been to, some of the smaller guys, you know, they use a ratchet press or small basket press, and our pneumatic bladder press is... been very versatile in the sense of pressing, as well as it acted as our destemmer as well for a few of our wines.
If that was one of the things you did, what would you do differently next time?
What we do differently, again, it's kind of the same. We're so young that we don't really know anything concrete yet. We probably would have, it doesn't have a whole lot to do with winemaking, but it has a lot to do with opening the business. Was when people tell you construction and things are going to take... you know, they give you a deadline. Most people in the know tell you to times that by 3. In our experience, we probably should have times it by 10. So just as far as like understanding the, you know, and just coming down to Asheville and being involved in, you know, the production of alcoholic beverages is one of those things that we're bound by the seasons. Basically, we farm and then we use our products to farm. And when the grapes are ready, the grapes are ready. It doesn't matter kind of where we're at. We need to have a place to bring them and a method. So that was one thing that we thought we were going to be ready 10 times earlier than we actually were. So juggling our time with bringing grapes in and processing wines was something that was probably our biggest issue opening up.
Tell me about your experience with the licensing operation or the process. That's always a hoot and holler for different people.
Yeah, luckily we have people that help us with that, and Asheville has been pretty good on that front as far as what we've heard. My partner Lauren, she generally handles all that, and as far as I know, we haven't had a whole lot of issues. You do everything by the book, and things go pretty straight and. Straight and easy, I guess.
Okay. Did you have any trouble setting up a bonded warehouse location within your shop here?
The biggest issue that we had, because we're in the River Arts District, is actually because we are in a flood zone. So getting just everything in line for the building, the insurance on everything, because we are right on the French Broad River, even though in our collaborative we're part of a massive group called the Foundation. We're actually the highest building in the area at part of that collaboration, but it made a lot of people hesitant to do anything down here because of flooding.
Well, people, we don't want you worried about flooding. Come on down here. They've got a lot of tables here set up with barrels. I dare say they're filled up with bungs. If you had a serious flood, you could hold on to that barrel as you float along and have a good glass of wine while you're floating down the river. But it's something that everybody has different problems with different reasons and this, that, and the other, dealing with the licensing process and insurance issues. So that's it. Let's talk about some of the things that you can do. You got a big room here. I mean, this looks to be...
5,000 square feet.
Wow, 5,000 square feet.
The whole building's 10,000, and we split it right down the middle, 5,000 to production and 5,000 for up here up front.
Okay, so... when you design the back side of your operation here, how many gallons of bottles of wine per year are you producing now?
We brought in 30 tons this first year. So we brought in 30 tons of grapes, 100% North Carolina. The furthest out was 2 hours away up in the high country. But we are producing out of that 30 tons. I think that equates to somewhere around 1,500 cases, is somewhere in that realm.
So what are you typically getting in terms of gallons per ton?
We're at about 140, which is not very much. And from the people we've been talking to, one of the reasons is probably has to do with our production processes and how we actually press. We don't crush into stem with a mechanical crusher destemmer. I honestly don't like the crushing and destemming process. It's especially with the paddles, it seems to be pretty violent. And with a lot of the grapes that we're working with, some of them come in underripe. And so the idea of beating them up and trying to extract things, or we're going to extract things that we don't want in the wine. So we did, any red wine we made this year was either hand destemmed and foot crushed. 100%, actually 100% of our reds were foot crushed this year. If not, they went through carbonic maceration. And then the others that we didn't do by hand, just because it was taking forever, we decided to use our press that Tyler was talking about.
Yeah, it was awesome. It's super gentle. You just put it in and roll, and the stems would latch onto each other and basically destem themselves, and then one of us would dive in and just take it out by hand. I mean, this is nothing short of a labor of love, so it took some time.
Well, that makes for very special wine, because typically you're getting most vineyards, they're getting around 165, 170 gallons. A ton.
We also press pretty light too.
Yeah. Yeah, we press really light.
Yeah, which is good. Yeah. Makes better wine. And I know some of the Muscadines and Katua, the Muscadine and Scuppernong wineries, they're doing about 135 to 140 gallons a ton. But they got thick skins, and they're
pulpy. Yeah.
and they're kicking the pressure up pretty high on their presses to get it out. Yeah. So, but this makes for better wine, what you guys are doing. So that's great. That's super great. Well, you've got a big place here. I imagine you've got events that you do here from time to time. What kind of events are you set up to handle?
I actually had my wedding reception here.
Really?
About a month and 1 day ago. Woo. You know, I didn't forget, Maddie. I got you. we're having some Christmas parties this month for some companies throughout town. We've had the River Arts District. There's like a stroll in the River Arts, and we had the after party here.
So when you have the private parties for like a company, you sort of shut the place down for the day or the evening or something like that?
It depends what they do. We have one company that is actually renting out the whole place for themselves. Otherwise, because there's so much space, we can kind of separate. We've had two events happen at the same time where we just separated the tap room. Our bar is separated in half, so it is kind of a natural line to separate the two of them.
Okay, super. Okay, well, we have a special event coming up here on the 12th of December. I'll talk about that.
Yeah, so on the 12th, we've gotten some of the main grower educators on the East Coast, especially in our area, to get together and come down to talk and guide some of the people that may be interested, as well as community members that might be interested in kind of what we're about and what we're thinking about doing. Tremaine Hatch, Mark Hoffman, Eric Case from Burnt Shirt coming down, and we're going to talk about kind of the new growers and some things to consider for maybe opening a winery after you start growing. That's on the 12th of December.
What time does that start again?
10 a.m.
Yeah, I think registration is at 9 and some reception, something, and then I think the program actually starts at 10.
Yeah, there should be a food truck here as well, so it should be should be a good time.
Okay, well, we've got a lot of people going to be listening to us who are interested in coming to these kinds of events, so hopefully this will give another plug. I know we'll be doing some work for them on behalf of the French Broad Vineyards to promote the event, so we should have a good turnout. How many are you expecting at the moment, do you know?
They give a guess from 30 to 40, and really, we don't know. We don't have an RSVP. It's just, so there might be 10, there might be 150.
Yeah. But bring them on. We have the space for them.
Yeah, we have the space for them, exactly.
Kane Hickey. Don't let me forget Kane Hickey's coming up. Yeah, Come on, Kane.
He's a Virginia Tech grad. He's my old alma mater. Let's talk about, you've got the event thing for here. Let's talk about how can people find you? Now we're here at the Plebe Urban Winery in downtown, right along the river in the, what's this
River
called?
Arts
the River
District.
Arts District.
Yeah, so.
People who don't know where that is, how can we find you? You have websites, social media?
Yeah, we're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We're online at plebeurbanwinery.com is our website. And we have events and we have our current menu always on there, updates. We're trying to get better at adding things when they happen, get more immediate at that. But with just the basically four of us, there's four people who work here. We're spread pretty thin at this point, and coming down from harvest, we're trying to get better at that. But we're located at 289 Lyman Street, which is right on the French Broad River. We're right about throw a football a couple times, and you'll hit 12 Bones Smokehouse as well as Wedge Brewing, Summit Coffee's right around the corner as well.
What's your hours of operation?
We just switched to winter hours, which are Wednesday through Friday from 4 to 10. And then 4 o'clock p.m. we open Wednesday through Friday. And then Saturday and Sunday we're open from noon to 10 o'clock.
Okay. And it's casual dress here. No ties are required.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever.
Bring your thirst and your...
Yeah,
okie dokie for good wines. Anything else you'd like to mention to the audience that they should know about you and your operation here?
I guess the big thing that we're really trying to do...
Easy parking. Don't forget that part.
Yeah, a lot of parking.
Ton of parking.
Yeah. That's one of the main reasons we wanted to be down here. From a... why we're doing what we're doing down here is to try and support the farmers more than anything. Our winemaking styles and practices lean a little bit more towards natural and organic wines. Mm-hmm. We're working on... Our vineyards we've been converting over to more organic practices that we manage, hence why we want to plant better grapes or grapes that are better suited for out here, and as well as the winemaking side, a lot of our wines that are about to come online are as close to, I guess, zero intervention as you can get, wild spontaneous fermentation, just basically harvested from the vine, separated from the stem, and fermented most of them, and so very gentle hand, gentle touch. All of our fermentation vessels, if it's not stainless steel, I prefer neutral oak, so basically that imparts no oak flavor, which is different for a lot of wine drinkers. Our wine's pretty delicate, but yeah.
I have to tell you folks who are listening in, I've tasted a couple of their wines while we've been here during the break. You need to know they're all dry wines, but very, very nice. You should really try it out. The other thing I want to ask you, as a farmer, grape grower, what's your minimum tonnage that you could take?
Yeah, 600 pounds of Chardonnay this year from one grower.
Yeah, we can take up to even as low as, I mean, we would take 200 pounds, especially depending on the varietal and everything like that. We're really trying to center and focus around our local growers and help them out.
We like to specialize in small batch production.
We've been talking with Chris Denisha and Tyler Kay of the Plebe Urban Winery in downtown Marshall along the river in the River Arts District. So come on down, have some good wine, and check them out. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to call that a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!